My guest, Mike Cleland, has written The Messengers and Stories from the Messengers about owls, synchronicity, how owls seem to be in the proximity with the alien abduction type experiences, missing time, other strange experiences as well. We're going to hear some of those stories. And then at the bottom of this hour, we open up the phone lines with your calls and questions and hopefully some of your own experiences with owls. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. So, Mike, you've collected hundreds of stories. Hit me with some of them. Hit me with some of the examples of kinds of things that, for example, you write in that people read the first book and they react. It triggers memories. What are the kinds of memories that it triggers? What are the experiences that you've heard?
You know, so they'll remember owl stories in particular. Well, here's a simple one from this is a fellow who was almost in conjunction with reading my book that, so I got a hold of this guy named Ben, and him and I have become close friends, and he's one of these maybe people. I'm very cautious to put him in a category, but let me tell you, if he tells you stories, they sound like the kind of stories a UFO experiencer would tell. He was with his kids, and they were at a roller skating party, and all the kids were coming home in the van, and he said, you know, like, this was the night I was going to talk about. They all the kids in the van were said, like, Dad, tell a story. And so he said, I'm going to tell them about these UFO experiences. And he told a handful of these bizarre stories to these kids in this van, and they were all really into it. And at the end, the last story culminated with a missing time experience. And when he told the story, right when he finished the story, right at the moment of finishing the story, an owl flew past the windshield. And so it was like this instantaneous moment. Finish the story, owl flies past the windshield. Later, he takes the kids on a hike, his own kids, and they walk down this path. And they're in the woods, and they're walking down this path, and there's an owl that flies and follows them. It goes from one tree to the other, and it follows them along. And the kids love it. He's kind of freaked out. So that night, the kids are very young, and that night he says, okay, I'll pick a book, I'll come up and read to you. So they pick a book called Say Boo. It's about a ghost that cannot say the word boo. So the ghost can't scare anyone because it can't say boo. So it's getting close to Halloween, and the ghost is all upset because he can't scare anyone, so he goes to the cow, and instead of saying boo, he says moo. And so he eventually meets an owl, and he can't say boo, but he can say hoo. So as he's reading this, the ghost is named Ben, and my friend's name is Ben. He's reading the book, and he reads the line aloud. Then Ben looked up into a tall pine tree and saw an owl, and the dog downstairs starts barking. So he runs downstairs, and he opens the door. There's nothing out there. He looks up in the tree, and there's an owl in the tree. And he is convinced, or feels strongly, let's say, he feels strongly that was the same owl that had followed them down the path that day. So, you know, I write this story up, and he's super helpful. So he's doing these kind of things. I really want it to be accurate. So I go back and forth and back and forth with documents over email and say, okay, I want it to be correct, because it's your story, not mine. And he's correcting the text, and he goes, you know what? These are the same stories. This is two stories of mine, right? So the story where I'm in the car telling the story, I'm finding my voice. The first time I ever tell that story is to my kids. I'm finding my voice. And the second story is this children's book. And there's a powerful synchronicity about this children's book where this ghost is trying to find his voice. And then I see the owl out the back door. Now, this happened in conjunction with writing the present book. And I have found that a lot where there was, I'm not quite answering your question directly. I'm sort of in a way indirectly answering the same question, where the act of working on these stories with the people, they will often go from maybe people to saying, you know, I feel strongly that I have had some sort of UFO contact. So, I'm convinced the act of writing has some sort of power to it. The creative process of writing, putting things in a book, talking aloud on a podcast. I have had so many people. There's one fellow in the new book who was driving in his car, coming home from work. He crossed a bridge. An owl flew right in front of his windshield and scared him. Full daylight, whoa, he like, it really shocked him. Big owl flies right in front of his windshield. He drives about a half a mile further, and there's a big UFO hovering alongside of the highway. He was in traffic. He had to just keep on moving, and he lost sight of it. Now, he was listening to my voice. He had taken a lecture that I had given that's on YouTube and downloaded it and was listening to that lecture. So this blew my mind where he was listening to my story about owls and UFOs as he saw an owl and a UFO. And I have no idea what to make of that. The power of that synchronicity is just so, the knot is just tied so tight, I can't untangle it.
You have several, at least a few instances where people describe owls that are impossibly large, right? And they're not really thinking anything of it. There's a 4 foot tall owl.
That is very common. Yes, that's very common. Yeah, and what did the, usually in the context is alongside the road. I have an amazing, so the typical story is, someone's driving down the road, and I have a story of this where a fellow told me this story. It was funny. He told it at a UFO experiencer support group, and he was at the group, and everyone in the group, and Leo Sprinkle was leading this, that was a man I have a huge respect for, was leading this group at the conference when they used to be held in Laughlin, Nevada. And he's off in the corner, didn't say anything. Right at the end of the meeting, he kind of raises his hand and says, has anyone in the room here had any odd experiences with owls? And I mean, he almost fell out of his chair when everyone in the room raised their hand, including me. And then he told this story where he said, I was driving down the road at night, and there was a 4 foot tall owl on the side of the road. And I pulled right up next to it, and I rolled my window down, and I looked at it, and I got this really bad feeling. Like, I wasn't supposed to be there. So I got in the car, I just, you know, hit the gas and drove away. Late, he's a photographer, and he went and took pictures of some owls in a nest in the woods. And I told him about this nest in the woods, and he takes these pictures of owls. And it, as he's taking the pictures, he's like, I don't think that was an owl I saw that night. So he actually goes and gets hypnotic regression. Very little comes up out of the hypnosis session, except the owl was wearing boots. So here we have, again, this blurring, you know, like something, it's because there's no owl on Earth that is 4 foot tall. There's big owl is a 2 foot tall owl is a huge owl. A 4 foot tall owl is simply impossible, can't exist. I could have filled 3 volumes of books just in stories of 4 foot tall owls. It would have got a little repetitive at a certain point. So I just, you know, I could only, there's only so much you can say when that you hear the same story over and over again.
This guy went as far as to have hypnotic regression. Have you considered it for yourself?
I have attempted it 4 times. I had some interesting stuff show up, though very little that that like it feels like it confirmed anything for me. So I had a hypnosis session with Bud Hopkins when he was still alive, and just recently I had a hypnosis session with Mary Rodwell.
In the new book,
you
have several examples where it is transformative. The experience really does change people in dramatic ways. They're different after the encounter. The owls are part of the encounter. There's other stuff that's going on, obviously, but a lot of things happen to them. Some they can remember, some they can't, but they are different people afterward. Susan McLeod is one of the examples in the new book. What happened to her?
Oh my gosh, that's a great story. It's funny because she told an amazing story. And at the end of the story, like, I got a hold of her and said, she has owl totem poles all around her house. She has Native American heritage or First Nation heritage. She lives in Canada. And so she has seen a lot of owls. At the time of this event, there were owls all around her house. And she has had other experiences. So she had an amazing experience where she had a friend that died, and she has a teepee in her place in Ontario, off in the woods. So she walks down the path from her house to the teepee, and it's at nighttime, and she builds a fire and burns sage and pounds a drum, and she's having a ceremony, a ritual ceremony, which I think is important, like what was going on leading up to this experience. She was performing a ceremony. And she's in this teepee, and she feels something brush against the teepee, and it's big. And she's like, oh my gosh, is there a bear out there? So she opens the teepee window, or the steps out, and there's a family, or she says it's a family, she calls a family of five Sasquatch, standing, boom, right there, outside the teepee. She runs back in, she beats the drum some more, she really beats it loud, she's kind of freaked out, and then she peeks out again, and they seem to be gone. So she runs really quickly back up to the house, and she sees them down further away. And she gets the distinct feeling that they moved, this family of five. She said they were standing like a corny family portrait with the two adults in the back and three small ones in the front. Big, hairy Sasquatch. Now, she runs into the house to tell her kids, and the kids are all freaked out. Mom, Mom, there's something in the house. And there's black shadow beings that are zipping around the house. And she burns some sage, and she comes from a tradition of healers, and then she wants to tell her husband, who's in the garage, it's his wood shop, and so she goes to run, and she knocks on the door, the door's locked. She can't get in. He's actually barricaded the door, so no one can get in. And she gets in, and she says, "What's going on?" "What's going on? And he's seeing the same black shadow figures. He's terrified. They're zipping in and out of the garage. They're peeking in the windows. She says, "Oh, I gotta step away and just figure out what's going on." So she steps aside, and she literally says, "I asked God, what does this mean?" And a triangle-shaped UFO hovers above her in the night sky. It just passes over above her, just barely above the trees. Her husband saw it too. Actually, it was her partner at the time. They weren't married. And she says something unusual. It was like flitting in and out of like reality. It wasn't like a solid structure. It was like kind of a hologram of a triangle craft. This at a time when she was seeing all kinds of owls, and she has amazing, beautiful owl stories that associate with death, that where she, I think there's these people who have kind of a like a magnetism for these kind of paranormal experiences, and she's certainly one of them. So, you know, the question I had asked her is like, what was going on in your life at this time? She said, "I was seeing owls all the time when this event took place." So that story goes way beyond just a UFO sighting that you could write down and fill out the little form when the MUFON investigator shows up. So much weird stuff is going on there. And this woman, as part of all these paranormal experiences, she also had a near-death experience as a little child. So she's now working as a psychic, and I've had many hours of conversations with her. She's an amazing, warm-hearted, radiant person. And so her life has been transformed by these experiences. And she says one of the more powerful experiences she ever had was a visionary dream. And coming from a Native tradition, she interpreted this dream within the framework of her culture, which is the Mi'kmaq tribe of Ontario and the Northeast, where she rode on the back of an owl. And she said she felt such love that it changed the direction of her life. So that's a really beautiful story. I'm really proud of that story, and really felt honored that she would let me tell it in the book.
You have another connection, a near-death experience kind of connection that you mentioned in the second book, the newest book, a lady named Denise Lynn.
Oh, yes, Denise Lynn. She's a working psychic. She's a working, she does books on animal totems, and she does books on healing and does psychic work and Reiki work. So here's this connection again. So this is something that shows up in both books, but much more in the second book, this connection with the near-death experience. When she was 16 years old, I think, in the summer of 1967, the summer of love, she was shot and killed. She was riding a motorbike along the road. Someone came up alongside her, rammed her off the road, and then rolled his window down and shot and killed her. She was dead when she arrived at the hospital. And she came out of it. She has the experience of crossing a river. She said it was this magical, glowing river. I knew that if I crossed it, I would no longer be in the world of the physical. And it's a beautiful telling how she describes this. And she heard a voice that said, "You have to go back." And she was like, "No, I don't want to go back." And she felt like a lasso, a cord, had pulled her back. And then she was back in her body. And she then went on 10 years later, summer of 77, with her husband, they were fishing in Northern California, and they were on their way back to San Francisco, and she saw a light in the sky. And she said, let's see the light. It's weird. Wait a minute. The light turned over there. Let's follow it. So the husband was like, what am I doing? And they drive the pickup truck down some lonely road, and she's following this light. And they finally get to a point where he says, I'm not driving any farther. And they get out of the car, and they kind of have an argument. And then he sees it. He didn't have a very good view of it, but this light just – she said she telepathically in her mind said, if you're real, come right here. And then whoosh, this thing just immediately, like a 50-foot wide flying saucer, hovers directly above the trees right next to him. And she had a very strange reaction. She said, she yelled in her mind, I want to help people. I want to be of service to people. I want to be of service to people, which is a very unusual reaction. And she wrote about this in one of her books, and I've talked to her at length about this. And so then the thing eventually, an airplane comes by, and this thing sort of senses it. That's her feeling, and whoosh, it's gone. And her husband get in a huge argument because she said we needed to follow that UFO. It flew away. We should have driven after it. And he's like, no way. That night, the next morning, actually, they conceived a child. They made love and had conceived a child, and that was their doctor said, you will never be able to have a child. She knew right away that she was pregnant. The doctor said, the severity of your gunshot wounds from 10 years earlier, 1967, and so now this child is born. So here we have a UFO sighting from someone who had a near-death experience, someone who screams at the UFO telepathically and says, I want to serve people, and then she has a child. When the doctor said she never could. It's a remarkable story. She goes into the woods one day to find her spirit animal name. She also has Native American heritage. And she says she walked into the woods. Her goal going into the woods was to find her spirit name, her true name. And this is, again, what were you doing leading up to the event? She went with an intention. She sat down in the woods and closed her eyes and meditated. And when she opened her eyes, there was an owl on the branch right in front of her, like close enough to touch. She locked eyes with this owl, and this owl locked eyes with her, and the owl flew off. She said she looked at it for maybe a minute. She said it felt like hours, but it was probably a minute. And there were three little feathers on the branch. And she heard in her mind, that put the owls in your medicine bag. She had a Native American medicine bag, but it was at home. She's like, I don't have my medicine bag with me. She said that aloud. And then the voice in her mind said, you are your own medicine bag. Put the owl feathers in your medicine bag. So she takes these three owl feathers and she eats them without even thinking. And then the voice says, you have taken on the power of the owl. And so that she said her spirit name from that point on was White Feather. And now, in her travels, she's traveled all over the world. She's met with Native leaders. She's met with shamans. She met with a fellow named Credo Mutwa. Credo Mutwa is a South African. I think he's a member of the Zulu tribe. He's a shaman. And when he met with her, he looked at her and said, oh, you have been with the sky people many times. It's like, what? He shows them these traditional masks, these traditional Zulu masks that look like the cover of communion, big eyes, pointy chin. That you have been with them. You have been with the sky people. You have been abducted. She's like, no way. I have not been abducted. Credo Mutwa has a similar story where he claims to have eaten the flesh of an alien. This is documented.
I'll tell you what, we'll hear the rest of that story on the other side. We're talking with Mike Cleland about stories from the messengers, owls, synchronicities, encounters. We're talking with Mike Cleland about his books, The Messenger, and stories from The Messenger, owls and synchronicities and things of that sort. In a moment, we open up the phone lines. I hope you've got some owl stories of your own. Callers, please keep in mind what the general subject matter is tonight for our guest. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. So, Mike, before we go to the phones, you were telling a story on the other side of the break about Denise Lynn, your friend from this lady from Canada who had a near-death experience, transformed her life. And I think you said she traveled to South Africa, met a shaman, holy man, who recognized in her some unusual experiences. Please continue.
He said she had been abducted many times, and she didn't want to have anything to do with that. So she's, and I've talked to her, she's like, uh-uh, I'm not going there. I've never been abducted. And from, yes, that's, I can't, but I mean, there's no way for me to say what may or may not have happened. But what I can say is what she's sharing sounds like the kind of things that an abductee or an experiencer, let's say, or contactee would share. Someone just, she's now at, being of service to people. She's doing therapy work. She's doing psychic work. The second book is full of stories where people have that background. Now, the fellow she met, the holy man, the shaman, Credo Mutua, claims, I mean, I cannot, prove or disprove this, but he certainly tells a story of eating some strange gray flesh that he claims was the flesh of a gray alien or the sky people. And he said it took him to near death. It was like a psychedelic experience that lasted months. And he came out of it this kind of gifted shamanic vision, the capable of with psychic skills and capable of vision, and the Denise said she had never met anyone with the presence and energy that he has. I think he's still alive. He must, this would have been, I mean, he's old now, but I'm pretty sure he's still alive and still does interviews and such. So here's, we have this person who had a powerful owl experience, totally symbolic owl experience, had a powerful UFO experience, had a near-death experience, and then also her experience of eating the owl feathers ties into so many traditions, the communion tradition of the Catholic Church and the Bacchanalia traditions of eating the flesh of the god, although symbolically in the form of communion, and in symbolically eating a bull in the Bacchanalia festivals. But there's a rich tradition of taking on the properties of this god in this sacrament of eating, and she ate the owl feathers and was told that she had taken on the power of the owl, and now she's a psychic.
There was one other story. I can't remember if it's the first or second book that almost seemed poltergeistish. A lady named Cindy who had some kind of experience where things are flying around in her room, and her father comes in, and he experiences it as well. Does that ring a bell?
Oh yes, that's in the second book. Yes, Cindy Dove. Yeah, she's she, she. So this is she had a powerful owl experience, very strange, where she walked. This is she walked into the out of her driveway. She was walking a friend, and both her and her friend walked up to this owl that was standing on a trash can and was standing in this frozen pose with this owl with its wings outstretched, and it didn't move. She walked all the way back to the, said goodbye to him at the end of the driveway and walked all the way back and passed it at the garbage can again, still there in that frozen pose. After that, she started having all kinds of UFO experiences, more owl experiences. The other owls seemed very normal, owls passing in front of her and flying over her, but unusual. She recognized she had never seen owls before. She started that they were started flying in front of her, and she had a really amazing experience. Where she, this new house she moved into has all kinds of odd experiences. One of which was a her she was in bed reading in the afternoon, and there was a thud, thud, thud on the wall, and there was a the nightstand next to her started levitating. Sort of banging against the bed and against the sort of the wardrobe next to her bed. So it's banging around, and she jumps out of it, and she goes gets her father, and her father, she still lives with her father. Her father's elderly. She's taking care of her father. They comes back in, and she's like, "What is going on?" And he climbs under the bed to see if there's some there. Thought there was some animal somehow stuck and trapped under the bed that was somehow tied or wrapped itself around this nightstand. Nothing happened. The cord from the lamp on the nightstand. The lamp never fell off, even though the nightstand was pounding around in this crazy way. The cord eventually lit on fire, zapped, and then the fire went out, and there's smoke and everything in the room. And as soon as that happened, boom, the nightstand settled down. But she said it was rising off the floor and moving around. It terrified her, freaked her out. So, yeah, so here's, this is the, that poltergeist activity, which is something that should be in the realm of, you know, ghost hunting or something, shows up in context with this owl and UFO thing. Yeah. So, and she was seeing a lot of strange things in the sky at that house. There's a lot more to that story.
Well, we'll take a couple of calls. First-time caller, Kim in Michigan. Hey, Kim.
Hello, George. Thanks for taking my call. Mike, excellent topic. I had to call in. Not a UFO-type situation, but early in our marriage, many years ago, my wife and I lost a baby 3 weeks from term. We were living in Nevada at the time, but we carried her ashes with us for 5 years. And it was then we were able to have two children. We had two beautiful daughters living in Salt Lake, the best baby care in the world, up there at the University Hospital. And we, after the two children were born, we decided to take our firstborn, Adrian, back to Nevada and to bury her. And so we drove over to Wendover, and somewhere between Winnemuck and Wendover, we found a deserted valley and took a dirt road just to get away from everything. And we dug a hole and took this little plastic box with our ashes of our daughter and put her down. And then there was about 10 to 12 owls circling us. And it was just mind-boggling.
I mean, owls don't travel in packs like that or flocks, do they? Generally?
Very rarely. They're very unusual. Yes. So that has been reported, but that's very unusual. So, and this was daylight.
Yes, this was the middle of the day, middle of the summer. Our children were born in July and August, and there's no explanation other than that this was some type of, in our opinion, this was a symbolic thing of we're burying our daughter, and it was just us. And then when we decided to move from Salt Lake to back to Michigan, we sent our daughters back. They were in elementary school at the time, and it wasn't an owl, but it was a white dove appeared in our yard for a month before we moved back. And I mean, so I'm thinking that these got to be symbols from the other side. There's some connection to the phenomenon, as it has become known now, because there seems to be a connection between this other realm, UFOs, spirits, and I think this is just symbols. But
certainly the question, I've said it a few times on the show here, what was going on leading up to your sighting, to your event? And I treat owl sightings and UFO sightings, I treat them totally equally. I don't weight one more than the other. So you had a very powerful owl event at a highly charged moment in your life and your wife's life. And so owls, this is coming from me. I'm sort of cherry picking the lore to what is matching what I'm finding in my research. The owl would be a totem or a symbol of the transformative experience. And an owl is not a symbol of something light. An owl is a symbol of something very challenging. Doesn't make it bad. Doesn't make it wrong. But it is not a light totem. It is a heavy totem. And so So that does not surprise me that you saw owls at that moment.
Kim, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. West of the Rockies, Bruce in Albuquerque. Hey, Bruce, you're on with Mike Cleland.
Hi, Mike. Hi, George. Great to be on. I'm first-time caller. George, I love the way you curate your shows and research them.
Thanks.
My story is about a time when I used to visit a certain golf course with my dog. And there was a particular place where I felt compelled to crawl through some very tightly packed juniper trees, and when I did that, I would feel somehow transformed. And on one of these occasions, when we emerged, I sat with my dog, and we seemed to take this, create this formation between us. Now, after we'd done that, I became aware that there was something above me, and I looked above me, and it was well after sunfall, and I could see an owl cross overhead. And then I was aware of everything the owl was about to do. And it perched behind me on one of these trees, and then I knew it was going to circle us, and it did. And I knew it was going to perch on a nearby tree, and it did. And then it spoke to me, and it used my name, and it spoke my name three times. And then I knew it was going to come down and sit across from me, which it did, and it sat there very upright. And my dog also had the habit of sitting very upright. So the three of us were sitting in what amounted to a circle, except that the three of us were kind of at the 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock arrangement. So there was sort of an empty space. And we just sat there, and my dog was perfectly quiet and perfectly still, which is not like him at all. And we sat there like it was a meeting that we had been waiting to have. And, I mean, my feeling at the time was perfectly calm and expectant and respectful. And this was like an assignation. And since then, I've had other experiences with owls where I feel I've been called out to meet them. And to meet, I've had my one UFO experience was connected to an owl in the sense that the following night in that same location, I went to meet the owl who kind of explained what that UFO experience was, if you like. None of this, of course, was done in human language, but the message was clear enough.
So, Mike, the idea of speaking to an owl-type person who interprets a UFO experience, is that unusual?
It is not that unusual. No, I've got a few, and it's more in the first book. There's a handful of accounts that, he was, I was almost like, you said a few things word for word that came out of the first book. This is the problem as far as now, for me, the question I want to ask you now is, how has your spirituality changed? How has your view of reality changed after these events?
I mean, it's wholesale because I've had experiences with other animals since, and I had a profound accident in advance of this experience. I have been put in touch with my deceased father as a result of this, and an owl mediated that experience for me, called me to a tree where I sat, and I knew that I was... essentially, the owl was mediating that experience. And since I had that experience, which was a sort of creating, if you like, a vertical, because it was directly above me, and from that point forward, I was able to draw my father's energy myself. But in a sense, I would request a kind of access. So, for example, I said, finally, I do want to have an experience with a UFO. And within a month or so, I was called out at 2 a.m. in a windstorm, and I was set up in a very particular place. I knew where to go and exactly where to lie and exactly where to look, and the UFO showed up. And it was all very matter of fact, but it happened exactly as I expected it to happen. I went back home. I went out the next night to what I thought was an appointment in the same spot. But I was diverted, and the owl called me to a separate place across the street, to a tree, and I waited there, and I knew exactly when the owl would call again. It was very uncanny, and I knew when the owl would stop talking to me, and I felt what the owl had said to me. And I could tell, I could go on and elaborate, but since then I've had a roadrunner jump on my head when I knew it would from a tall tree. I've had praying mantises walk around me in circles. I've had all sorts of crazy things happen. And I say crazy, but for me, it feels very natural. Bobcats walking up to me, all kinds.
I'll tell you what, Bruce, you might have to get in touch with Mike and share some of these experiences. There's going to be material there.
Right on my website.
We've got the connection info on the Coast to Coast website. Bruce, thanks for that very interesting call. Try to get one more in on the wild card line. Matt in Colorado. Hey, Matt, you're on with Mike Cleland.
Hey, good evening, Mike and George. We appreciate your hard work and stuff. And as I was waiting to talk to you, I see like a streak across the sky. So I see the UFO while I was waiting for y'all. But to the story, this is a secondhand story I got from a friend, and this happened back in the early 90s, and she was working at a youth treatment center in northern New Mexico, and she was working the night shift, and she said that it's happened several times, and she had witnesses. Some of the staff members would come out and see this taking place, but owls would harass her. She had anywhere from like 10 to 20 owls that would fly after her car and try to come into her windows, and she said she'd go outside, and there'd be like 20 owls hanging out on the tree limbs of the trees outside the the facility. And I wish I knew a little bit more about it, but just hearing the topic tonight, I thought I had to share that. I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
Well, I would love to talk to this woman and ask the questions, like what was going on in your life. And, and it's very unusual that someone would be harassed by that many owls. I mean, there could be a perfectly mundane reason, but I wouldn't know what that is right off the top of my head. But yeah, these are fascinating. And the other fellow, this is very common that these stories, and this broke my heart to have to, in the first book, to edit out so much, right? I was trying to make a point, so it would take a very long, elaborate story and chop it down and whittle it down to just a few paragraphs. And that seemed really unfair to the people who had experienced it, because like the callers just before, these stories are often incredibly complex and often without a clear, conclusion. Like these things end up very open-ended where, in a Hollywood movie, you would write a punchline to it, but that reality doesn't offer up that same tidiness.
Yeah, it's not as tied up in a bow so you can figure out what the heck it all means.
Exactly. It's a mystery. Yeah.
Mike Cleland, it's been great to have you here. Stories from the Messengers is the second book. The Messengers, Owl Synchronicity, and the UFO Abductee is the first book. They both stand on their own, but they're complementary as well. And I hope you'll come back and share with us additional stories, because I'm sure you're going to get a whole bunch of them pouring in.
This has been great. It's been a huge honor. And I got to say, it was so fun to hear that music when I was waiting for us to come on. So
yeah, well, that tells you that it's real, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad. This was a joy. And my life has changed because of this stuff, because of this research. So I'm not the person I was 11 years ago before I, got hit with the whammy of those owls. And it has been problematic in a lot of ways where it's been tough, but at the same time, it's been exciting to go down this path.
Mike Cleland, thanks very much for being here. Interesting conversation. I'm sure we'll have you back again. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. One last bird song. The Black Crows take us into the break, and in a moment, we'll be talking about the Golden State Killer.